Welcome to Power Play. I'm Evan Sullivan. On the program today, papal visit, but what about a papal apology? The Pope has expressed a, quote, willingness to visit Canada in an effort towards reconciliation, but will an apology on Canadian soil finally come for residential institution survivors? We'll ask not only the government, a minister, but Lynn Grew, the chief executive of the Native Women's Association of Canada, what she would like to see. Then, Green Rebel, will the new environment minister's past as an outspoken climate activist alienate the oil patch? Will he crank up Canada's commitments for the COP26 climate summit just days away? The new environment minister, Stephen Guilbeault, joins us in just a few seconds. Then, O'Toole's latest vaccine stance. But what exactly is he saying this time? Well, check it out.
All of our members in the House of Commons will be vaccinated. We respect the rules. And as we challenge the precedent set by the Board of Internal Economy, we will respect the rules both before our question of privilege and after.
Okay, so he met with his caucus, and now the Conservative leader says, yes, he accepts the rule that all MPs need to be double-vaxxed to come to Parliament, but then he says he's going to promise to try to overturn the rule when Parliament resumes so he can reject it. So does he accept it or not? How many of his MPs are actually vaccinated? The press gallery is going to convene to try to decipher that one. This is Power Play. Let's get to the players. A very problematic message. Those are the words from Alberta Premier Jason Kenney as he responded to the appointment of longtime environmental activist Stephen Guilbeault to the job as the new environment minister yesterday. Before entering the political ecosystem, of course, Stephen Guilbeault was well known as an environmental activist. He co-founded Équiterre, very well known in Quebec, and he worked as a director for Greenpeace. Remember, and you've probably seen these photos now, in 2001, he famously was arrested for climbing the CN Tower and unfolding a banner protesting Canada's lack of action on climate change. But times changed. Now the activist is the actor. He's gone from leading demonstrations to leading delegations. And he's leading the Canadian delegation later this week at the UN Climate Change Conference, COP26, in Glasgow. That kicks off Sunday. So what will he do in the job? How does he respond to some of the early concerns? Let's find out. Joining me now is the new Environment Minister, Stephen Guilbeault. First of all, congratulations on your appointment, sir, and always good to have you on the program. Let me start with COP26, just days away. Mm-hmm. Your government has promised to cut greenhouse gas emissions by 40 to 45% below 2005 levels by 2030. You're new in the job. Will you raise those targets or will you stick to those targets?
No, I will stick to those targets. Obviously, the environment minister doesn't determine that by himself. It's a collective effort. It's a cabinet decision, as you've seen in the process that we've taken to increase those targets, which used to be 30% until we presented new targets to the United Nations this last spring.
Okay, so you'll keep those for now. Will you urge the government to change the price of carbon? By 2030, your government promises to keep the price of carbon at $170 a ton by 2030. Again, because Canada is not really on track or hasn't in the past met any of its targets, will you push the government to raise that target of $170 a ton by 2030? Or is that a target that you're comfortable with?
Oh, it's not only a target that I'm comfortable with, but it is a target that I advocated for in the past government. So I'm very comfortable with the position that Canada has taken. And in fact, the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, says that if all G20 countries did what Canada's doing when it comes to pricing pollution, the world would be on its way, two-thirds of its way, to meeting the Paris target agreements. So I think Canada has made significant step in the fight against climate change, but I'm the first one to recognize that we need to do more. And I think there's one thing we've heard during the last election campaign from coast to coast to coast is that Canadians want their governments, all level of governments, but certainly the federal government, to do more when it comes to climate change.
Okay, I mean, Canada's never hit a target that it set on this, but so I don't know if it's the global standard or not, but I just, can you, Minister, tell me, when you say Canada needs to do more, that's going to be your file. What mm-hmm. more will you advocate and urge Canada to do? What does more mean?
Well, we had a very extensive platform on the environment and specifically climate change during the last election, a platform that was deemed to be the most credible by a number of, in fact, all of the experts that analyzed a political party's platform gave us an A or an 80% plus grade, whereas parties like the NDP, for example, got an F for theirs by a very preeminent Canadian scientist and IPCC contributor. In that platform, I think two important measures that I could point to: the elimination of fossil fuel subsidies by 2023, which is 2 years earlier than our G20 partners have committed to do. So that the commitment at the G20 is to eliminate them by 2025. We're saying we're going to do it 2 years earlier. That's a very important measure. And the other one is to put a cap, a ceiling on the emission from the oil and gas sector at current levels and diminishing over time, so that we can reach the target that is now law in Quebec and Canada to be net zero by 2050.
Okay, but there you are going to go to COP, and the International Energy Agency, the WHO's climate, they are not only calling for a stop to all fossil fuel subsidies, they're saying a stop to all future investment in fossil fuel projects, a stop issuing all permits for new projects for fossil fuel companies. Do you support those? And are those part of the more that you're talking about? No permits, no more investment, and no more subsidies.
As you know, Evan, our constitution is very clear. Resource natural production is a provincial jurisdiction. Federal government, where we can, and the Supreme Court was very clear on that, on the case on carbon pricing, where we can intervene is on pollution. And that's exactly what we're doing. That's exactly the commitment that we've taken. And the problem is pollution. So we're by capping pollution from the oil and gas sector, by reducing pollution in other sectors of our economy, transportation, building, steel, cement. That's how we get to the very ambitious targets that we've set for ourselves. And I'd like to correct a record. Our government has never missed a target that we've presented. Our target is for 2030. And again, last week and this week, again, experts are saying that between the measures that we've already announced and what's in our platform, Canada should be able to meet. Now, we have to deploy those measures. We have to continue working at getting the job done. But I think we're well on the way to meet our 2030 target.
The commissioners for the environment have said that we've always fallen behind on the road to those targets. But of course, you're right, the targets are 2030. We're not at 2030, but so far we've fallen behind, as you know. What's your response to Premier Jason Kenney's reaction to your appointment? He said you are a problematic appointment, that he's concerned that you and now the former environment minister, Jonathan Wilkinson, are essentially going to undermine the Natural Resource Centre, and that province will suffer. So what's your response to Jason Kenney?
As I already pointed out, our measures are known, publicly known. They were in our platform. Some are already part of Canadian policy, Canadian legislation. So there's no surprises there. And I might remind Premier Kenney that in 2015, I was on stage with Premier Notley to support her climate change leadership plan, which at the time, Premier Notley wanted to eliminate coal electricity production in the province, invest in renewable energy, put a price on pollution, and oh my Lord, put a cap on pollution from the oil sector. And I was there as an environmentalist supporting her. I didn't think that the plan was perfect, but I thought it was a significant step in the right direction. So I have worked in the past with the province of Alberta, with a number of other provinces. I've worked with internationally as well on climate change. I've worked with companies. I was an advisor for 10 years for a venture capital fund. So this idea that I'm anti-business is, you know, simply not rooted in reality. And in fact, that very fund invested through some of their investment, generated tens of millions of dollars of investment in provinces like Alberta.
So I know you say you're not anti-business. You said earlier today you don't have a secret agenda. Your government owns the Trans Mountain Pipeline. Do you support completing that and selling it So do you support the completion of that pipeline and then, as the government plans to do, selling that pipeline so that it can be kickstarted into use? Is that something that you will also support?
I've said it before, but that decision was done before I came into politics. I'm not going to rewrite history. We bought this pipeline. That's that. I mean, my role is to work to ensure that we continue and accelerate the fight against climate change. Our measures and our proposals to Canadians were very clear during the last election campaign, and that's the job I will be doing.
I think I lost you. I wonder if you can still hear me.
I can still hear you, but I'm. Can you still hear me?
Okay, we got you. Hang on. So yeah, I got you perfectly. I can hear you. We're just going to get your site up. Two last questions real quick. There's a real concern that the transition to green technology is too quick. The founder of the investment company Blackstone yesterday said oil's hit a 7 or 8 year high. There's not enough investment in fossil fuels to handle the short term. The green transition is going to lead to social unrest, fuel shortages, and high prices. What's your response to that if people are really feeling the pinch at the pump?
I think that's why working on the transformation is so important. And it's certainly the federal government has an important role to play. Provinces and territories, the private sector has as well. And that's what we need to do to ensure that this transformation is as seamless as possible. And I'm not saying we're there yet, but we need to continue working to achieve this goal.
Okay. Real quick, what will your big push be at COP26 when you go there and it kicks off on Sunday?
Well, I think to recognize that we've done a lot in Canada, but that we have a lot more to do. And what is true of Canada is true of the international scene. We all need to do more collectively to fight climate change if we want to avoid the worst risks that are posed by climate change.
And since you're the minister I've got on record, I want to talk to you about Pope Francis. The Holy See has expressed a, quote, willingness to travel to Canada as part of the reconciliation, but doesn't say when, doesn't say he's going to apologize. Does the federal government support the papal visit, and are there a minimum requirements, because I know the government's going to have to pay for part of it, will you require that if he comes, he has to apologize?
I think the Prime Minister has spoken on this before. I think we expect everyone to take their responsibility when it comes to residential schools. That certainly includes the federal government, but the Catholic Church has a role to play. As a Catholic myself, I feel strongly that the Church should also take its responsibility when it comes to residential schools.
Environment Minister Stephen Guilbeault, great to have you on the program. I appreciate it. Thank you so much, and congrats on your new appointment.
Thank you very much, Evan.
Okay, so that is the new Environment Minister. We'll pick up more of that later in the program, but the Environment Minister just spoke very much about the papal visit, and I want to dig into that, and I want to bring in CTV News parliamentary reporter Creason Adjikute for more. Creason, great to have you back on the program. Okay, so let's just drill down. What exactly did the Vatican say today about this visit?
Well, Evan, it wasn't very much details in today's announcement from the Vatican. The Vatican said that on the basis of reconciliation, in speaking with the Canadian Conference of the Catholic Bishops, they said His Holiness the Pope is willingness, showing his willingness to come to the country, to Canada. Nothing written in that statement with regards to is he going to apologize for the residential school treatment, for the role the Catholic Church played? When is he going to come? They said there's going to be a certain date in the near future announced, but very few details in terms of when is he going to apologize for the church? Where is he going to be going? All those are still yet to be decided.
So, no firm date, no commitment to apologize, no firm ideas about what's going to happen. What has been the reaction from some Indigenous leaders to this news?
Well, the AFN says that the Catholic Church must be accountable and acknowledge that the genocide and assimilation was done through these residential schools with the Catholic Church's role in these residential schools. You have Indigenous leaders and advocates very skeptical about the Catholic Church and what they say and then what they will actually do down the road. Indigenous leaders, we even spoke to Brenda Dubois, a residential school survivor based in Saskatchewan, and outright she said, you know, what are they coming here for? What are they going to apologize for what I have gone through in residential school? She went to the Labrette Indian Residential School, and she went very young. She was only 4 years old. So many questions. And obviously, this opens old wounds for residential school survivors, things that were swept under the rug, and this is all coming back again. A lot of emotions and tensions are high right now across this country with regards to residential schools.
Absolutely. We're going to pick up this and get more reaction. But as you say, for survivors of the residential institutions, again, not a lot of firm details. So as you told me earlier, baby steps at best. CTV News, Creason Adjikute, thanks, Creason. Great to have you on the program. And we will deal with the Pope's willingness signal. Does it actually signal a real apology? We'll continue the conversation with the CEO of the Native Women's Association next. Lots more to come. Stay right here with Power Play.
I think for the process of healing that you've mentioned for our Indigenous peoples, hopefully this is a beginning once again of a sign of hope that we are responding to the trauma and the legacy of the residential schools. And so we're very grateful that the Holy Father has accepted this invitation.
Okay, so he's accepted the invitation, but will Pope Francis not only make the visit next year, when, and will he make an apology? Okay, we just don't know. The Catholic Church has faced months of scrutiny, years of scrutiny, generations of scrutiny for its role in the residential institution situations. A group of residential institution survivors and Indigenous leaders are actually heading to the Vatican in December to meet with the Pope. Should the Pope not only commit to an actual date, but an actual apology? And is an apology enough? Does the Church have to do more? After all, the residential school settlement of 2005 required the Church to raise $25 million as a form of compensation to survivors. They only raised $3.9 million and never finished the settlement. Let's find out more reaction. Lynn Grew is the CEO of the Native Women's Association of Canada. She joins us now. Always a pleasure to have you on the program. You tweeted out that you're glad the Pope is, quote, willing to visit. What's missing today, or is today enough for you?
Well, today's a start. So we certainly wanted to see this, the Pope come to Canada, and we wanted that because this is what we're hearing on the ground, that the community members do want an apology. We understand that some feel differently, but it was one of the calls to action in the report, in the TRC report, number 58, I believe that it was. So it is an important part of healing. So there is a step towards the right direction. I don't think the Pope can come to Canada, will come all this way, and not have that apology, an unfettered apology. If that was to happen, I think that would be a very serious mistake on their part to come here without this apology.
An unfettered apology on behalf of the Church for the Church's role in the residential institutions. Does there have to be? I know that was a call to action, the Truth and Reconciliation, the formal apology. What about compensation? Would you like to see the Pope also come and announce some form of compensation, some kind of recompense?
I mean, I do believe that the apology should come with some action. So it should come with some appropriate compensation of some kind or an announcement. Because just the apology on its own, I don't think it's proportionate in any way to what has happened. So we're talking about some financial compensation, but also we need to think about the criminal side, the criminal justice of what's happened as well. So, you know, the reconciliation or the coming out of this of this terrible tragedy, and I'm going to say a genocide, needs to have more than one action. So it needs to be more than an apology. Apology doesn't mean much without action attached to it.
Okay, action. When you say the criminal side, what are you actually talking about there?
Well, there's people that are still alive that committed crimes, against the children. Sexual abuse, we know. Malnutrition happened. Children that were deprived of medication when they should have had it. There was a lot of tuberculosis. So, you know, what happened? Who is responsible for that? Who did direct actions to harm the children or even cause their death? This has not been dealt with yet. This will need to be dealt with at some point.
In December, a delegation including residential institution survivors and Indigenous leaders will meet with the Pope. This is a three-day visit. What do you hope that meeting actually accomplishes? And what if the Pope apologizes there, but then not publicly in Canada?
So I'm not sure what that visit might accomplish. I think that it's very important that the Pope be here to apologize directly to the people, to the victims. You know, what will happen at that meeting, I'm not quite certain. But again, we feel that the most important part of all this is for the Pope to come to Canada.
Just quickly, while I've got you, I want to talk about the newly unveiled cabinet. Carolyn Bennett shuffled out as the Crown Indigenous Relations Minister. Mark Miller taking over her portfolio. Patty Hajdu, former health minister, goes to Indigenous Services. What is your reaction to the move? And obviously there's a very big date coming up on Friday, the final date that the government has, if they are going to appeal the decision, whether or not to appeal the decision on the child services case in the human rights case.
Well, you know, the organization, our organization was quite vocal about our disappointment and our critique on the National Action Plan and the implementation of the National Action Plan for Missing and Murdered Women. So we are relieved, to be honest, that there is a change, a significant change in the department with Minister Miller taking over Crown Relations. So we're hoping to see a better relationship there. And when he talks, and we've had interactions with him, he talks about trust and establishing that trust with us. So we're pleased about that. We also have had very good experiences and interactions and Minister Hajdu, who has you know, an excellent portfolio. And in terms of you know, what will happen with the appeal, we're certainly hoping on that decision that the right thing is going to happen and the government will not appeal that decision, and you know, the children will get their justice and this case will be closed.
Okay, just Lynn Grew, just real quick, you're saying you think it's a good thing to have shuffled Carolyn Bennett out? She had lost trust.
Well, for the Indigenous women that we, you know, we wanted to see movement on the national inquiry report and the national inquiry file, and we did not see that. We did not see any significant movement on that file. There, the government's action plan that was proposed came in with no action in it, and we were very vocal on that. And we think they missed the mark very significantly, and that was the minister that was responsible for the portfolio. So we're happy to see the change happen.
Okay. Lynn Grew, Native Women's Association, thank you so much. Always a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much.
Okay, let me move over to news on inflation, because the Bank of Canada is keeping its key interest rate at 0.25%, saying inflation now appears stronger and more persistent than they expected. So they forecast the annual inflation will continue upwards through the rest of the year. You probably know this since everything's more expensive right now. It's going to average 4.75%. They've also lowered expectations for economic growth this year down to 5.1%. The Bank of Canada Governor Tiff Macklin says they expect inflation to normalize sometime in 2022, early 2023.
The combination of ongoing supply disruptions and related cost pressures, as well as higher energy prices, is putting upward pressure on many prices around the world. In Canada, inflation is currently running at about 4.5%. We now expect it to rise to close to 5% by the end of this year, before coming back down to around the 2% target by the end of next year. In other words, we continue to expect that inflation will ease back, but relative to our July forecast, it's higher for longer.
So things are higher. The bank is going to end what's called quantitative easing program, and that has been what they've been trying to do throughout the kind of tough economic times to boost the economy by buying government bonds. They're going to roll back that, or at least dial it back a bit. Meantime, a former staff member from the Alberta legislature, Riella Kimmel, alleges in a lawsuit against Premier Jason Kenney's office that she was fired after complaining she was subjected to a poisoned work environment. In her statement of claim, she alleges ministers and staff engaged in sexual harassment and heavy drinking in legislature offices. Kimmel, who worked as the chief of staff to the Minister of Jobs, Economy and Innovation, also alleges staff in the Premier's office spread false rumors. She had leaked the stories to the media. She was fired in February. The allegations have not been proven in court. Kenney's office put out a statement saying in part, quote, sexual harassment is abhorrent and has no place in our workplaces or society. Any government employee who believes they have witnessed or been personally subjected to harassment is strongly encouraged to come forward so that appropriate action can be taken. The decision to end Ms. Kimmel's employment with the government was unrelated to the matters contained in her statement of claim. The government will fully respond to the allegations in court as appropriate and required. Okay, stay with us. Lots to come. Is a papal visit on the horizon? The press gallery will dig into that. And then Aaron O'Toole says conservatives will follow the House of Commons vaccine mandate, but also fight to overturn it at the first opportunity. What do you make of that? Former Conservative Cabinet Minister Chris Alexander will be our special guest on the press gallery later in the program. Welcome back to the program. Why is this still so difficult? Pope Francis has expressed a willingness to travel to Canada, but he hasn't given a firm date when he'll come, not any word whether he'll actually apologize for the church's role in the cultural genocide that was the residential institution situation. That was just one of the calls to action for the Truth and Reconciliation Report. So what could a visit mean for the church's role? Remember, a delegation of Indigenous leaders and residential institution survivors are set to travel to the Vatican in December. That visit will include audiences with Pope Francis. So is this a renewed path for reconciliation? And does it come with more than just words? Does it need to? The press gallery is here. Fatima Sayed is a reporter with the Narwhal. Annie Bergeron-Oliver is a reporter with CTV National News, our parliamentary bureau here. Basically, she's my colleague. And our special guest is the Indigenous Reconciliation Group CEO, Rose LeMay. Good to see everyone here. Rose, I'm going to start with you. Pope's willing to come. What do you need to see?
Well, it's a great first step for the Catholic Church. We've been a long time waiting for this. We will need to see, though, more action, compensation for survivors of residential institutions. Whatever investigations must take place around the Catholic Church and individuals' culpability, that also must go ahead. Apology will not erase that need. But we also need the church to step up to do the work of reconciliation, similar to other churches in Canada have done, with learning for members who attend churches. And as National Chief Roseanne Archibald mentioned, if churches have been taken without proper compensation to First Nations or Inuit, then the land must be returned.
Okay, let me bring in Annie Bergeron-Oliver. The church is under fire, obviously, in 2005, the residential school settlement. They were supposed to pay $25 million. They only raised $4 million, and then they negotiated a way out of that. In the meantime, the government's got their own responsibility. They shuffled out Carolyn Bennett out of her role as Crown Indigenous Relations, replaced her with Mark Miller, and Patty Hajdu becomes the Indigenous Services Minister. Annie, they have a deadline on Friday for the federal court to appeal the First Nations child welfare case. That is days away. How important is that, Annie?
Well, Evan, this is crucial. You know, the government all along has talked about how its relationship with Indigenous people is the most important, that it is committed to reconciliation. And now, especially with this new mandate, the Prime Minister is trying to show that they are willing to take things seriously. And a lot of people are looking at this decision. You know, Justice Lemeny today said that this is a very complicated issue, that it potentially has, you know, precedent-setting ability. But I think to a lot of people, this does not look complicated. The question question is simple. Should the Canadian government compensate First Nation children and their grandparent or parents for the harms that the Canadian government did? It seems very simple, unless you're a government lawyer. And this is especially difficult for Patty Haidu, who's brand new to this position, and essentially the answer will have to fall on her. This is not necessarily the decision that you want as a brand new minister, as a brand new mandate. You know, the government is trying to build relationships, especially, you know, Minister Haidu, trying to build trust amongst Indigenous people. And right now, it looks very likely that the government may appeal. A lot of people think they will. Lametti today was asked that question, will he appeal? He said it's complicated. He said a decision has not yet been made. But they only have 2 days, and they've had a month. In fact, I even asked him, you know, every time the government appeals this decision, it costs taxpayers money. Lametti admitted this has been going on since 2007, and he even admitted, Evan, that, yeah, this is expensive, but he wouldn't put a dollar value on how much money the government has spent in fighting these decisions in court since 2007.
Yeah, Fatima, weigh in, because both when it comes to the church and when it comes to the government, there's responsibility, there's the words, the apology, the government's made apologies, but a lot of folks see this decision on in children in the child welfare system as the action, in the same way the church may apologize, but where's the action? How do you view these two situations, Fatima?
You know, Evan, I was reading today that the government of Canada has attempted legal action against Indigenous communities about 20 times and has lost all of them. And I think at a certain point, we're at a point, rather, we're at this point now where it's very easy to see that there is very little willingness to actually do something on this file. Because if there was willingness, I don't think we'd be waiting for the nth hour decision that we are today. You know, it's Wednesday. The government could come out today. They could have come out Monday. They could have come out last week and said, we're not going to appeal this decision. We're going to look at our, we're going to look at how we can create a compensation plan. We're going to do this. Reconciliation matters to us. And here's our plan moving forward. The fact that we're not getting that clearly, the fact that that's not being said clearly by a new minister in a role who could set a new precedent, a new landscape, a new tone for the conversation is worrisome. And it's what we're seeing from the Pope as well, right? To bring it back to your original question, to your first question, rather. It had to take a lot of coaxing and pushing and persuasion and just tons and tons of commentary and begging to finally get to the point where the Pope just agreed to come without offering a plan. I think we're done with empty promises and words. We're done with we are considering. We're done with we are serious. We really need action at this point.
Rose, your sense of what Patty Haidu now in Indigenous Services has to do.
Well, on one hand, it is reversing a bit of a tide of history. On the other hand, what an amazing opportunity to set a legacy within the first few days of a minister's term. Now, I agree that there's been a lot of work to fight against Indigenous kids, and you were right, over 20 times. Can you imagine being Justice Canada lawyers who are being told to fight a losing fight? Judges over and over and over again are saying, follow the rule of the law. I mean, this, to push this a bit, this is, may not be reconciliation. This may actually be the rule of the law to pay out compensation to do it now. This is an opportunity for federal government. We'll see if they see it as such. I would guess that somebody within Justice Canada is seeing the possibility of the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal, if they have mandate over the federal government, which has always been apparently a bit of a friction point. What else would they have mandate over? Is that really the fear? Let's not get that in the way of the lives of Indigenous children.
Okay, I got to leave it there. We'll see what happens Friday. Really important day. As Fatima said, words versus action. We'll find out. The Indigenous Reconciliation Group CEO, Rose Lemay, great to have you on the program, Rose, getting your reaction on these two really important issues. I know Annie and Fatima are going to stick around, because coming up next, vexed by vaccines. Aaron O'Toole says he's going to respect the House of Commons' new vaccine mandate that you need a double vax if you're an MP to work there. But then he says, at the first chance, I'm going to formally challenge it so I can overturn it. So what's his position? Does he accept it or reject it? The press gallery is going to try to figure it out next.
our members in the House of Commons will be vaccinated. We respect the rules. And as we challenge the precedent set by the Board of Internal Economy, we will respect the rules both before our question of privilege and after. We respect our parliament. We respect our rules. We respect the ability to keep all Canadians safe. And I encourage everyone to get vaccinated. They're safe and effective for use.
Okay. Did you get all that? You're trying to have it both ways there. So that's Conservative Erin O'Toole. Now he's saying, yes, my party will abide by the new vaccine mandate for MPs that you need double vax to come to work. But then he says, by the way, we're going to challenge the rule at, quote, the earliest opportunity so we can actually try to overturn it. But anyone who comes to Parliament, he says, will follow the rule, so they'll be vaccinated. The question is, will all his MPs be able to do it? He won't say. Are all his MPs vaccinated? We have no idea. He won't say. But there's over 80% of eligible Canadians are fully vaccinated. Why are the Conservatives fighting this so hard? What's behind this strategy? And do we even understand what he's trying to say here? Let's bring back the press gallery. Fatima Sayed from the Narwhal is here. Andy Bergeron-Oliver for our CTV National News Parliamentary Bureau reporter here. And our special guest is Chris Alexander, the former Conservative Immigration Minister. Okay, great to have you back here. Chris, you've been in cabinet, so maybe you understand political doublespeak better than anybody. But so does Mr. O'Toole, I guess he accepts the rules now, but he's going to try to overturn them. What do you make of his position on vaccines? I'm just trying to figure it out.
I'm having trouble deciphering it as well. Evan, I think he's created an issue, our party has created an issue, where there should not be one. If you are a member of parliament, if you are expected to come together with others to provide leadership for the country in a difficult time, you should be vaccinated. And I don't think anyone who's in a position of responsibility in this country should be advocating any kind of exceptions other than the minimal health exceptions that most employers and most governments are accepting. It's confusing. It's unhelpful. I think it's going to take the focus away from where the opposition actually wants it to be, for reasons that are still unknown to me. Obviously, there's a vocal group. We don't know how many in the caucus who have a strong position on this because of privacy, because of some issue that they're citing. But it doesn't trump the national arguments that we've all bought into through this pandemic. Leadership requires setting an example. Vaccines are safe. Public health transcends almost all other considerations. They should just be doing it and moving on.
Annie, okay, so let's just get this straight. Mr. O'Toole didn't say that all MPs are now going to abide by the rules. He said any MP who shows up will have abided by the rule. But he wants to overturn the rule with a point of privilege when the House gets back November 22nd, and we don't know how many Conservative MPs are vaccinated or not. You were reporting on this. Am I right on all that?
You are, and it's very complicated. It essentially seems like Mr. O'Toole is trying to make everybody in his party happy, but it's not really working. I mean, one MP today said that he wishes the Conservative Party was much stronger opposing vaccine mandates like they did during the election. Another MP said, yeah, you know, I'm fully vaccinated. I'm proud to talk about it. And I believe that this has all become a bit of a disruption. You know, even today, Mr. O'Toole talked about how he believes that vaccines are really the best tool that we have to combat COVID-19. He encouraged everyone to get vaccinated, but at the same time, he's essentially telling unvaccinated members in his caucus that it's okay to not get the vaccine. Even when it comes to this point of privilege, it's not necessarily the fact that vaccines being mandated is something he doesn't like. It's more the process, basically, that he doesn't think it should have been this special committee, but the House of Commons as a whole that should have made the decision. So it's really complicated. And I think some of the key questions here are, you know, well, what happens to unvaccinated members of their caucus? Will it be like Doug Ford? before that they were just kicked out and removed completely? Do they have to sit as independents? You know, will they potentially just not be allowed to partake in any events in the House? Like, there's lots of questions here that Mr. O'Toole would not answer today. And, you know, we have to point out, too, that there are probably dozens of MPs who are vaccinated, and it may just be a very small minority of the Conservative Party. And so I think that leads to questions about Mr. O'Toole's leadership. And there are now many wondering, well, why is he potentially pandering to this small group of MPs in his caucus?
Well, Fatima, it's not like there's consensus there. One of his rising stars, she ran as the leadership candidate, Dr. Leslyn Lewis. I'm going to show you the tweet, because the next big frontier now is vaccinating the 5 to 11-year-old groups, as provinces are starting to do. And here's what she tweeted out. Never have Canadian children been used as shields for adults. Parents question vaccinating kids 5 to 12 without long-term data, a low risk of fatality, and cautions echoed around the world when the treatment neither prevents transmitting or getting the virus. I should say there are countless doctors who have said she's wrong on almost all of this from a scientific point of view. But what does it tell you when someone of her stature, and she's well-respected in the party, is tweeting this kind of thing out about vaccines for the next cohort?
I think it makes me question Mr. O'Toole's leadership. You know, I'm starting to lose count as to how many U-turns Mr. O'Toole has done since the election campaign began. And that's worrisome. You know, if he's going to, you know, if he's going to redefine the Conservative Party, as he says time and time again, if he's going to, you know, bring a new vision to that party, then he needs to pick a lane and stay on it. And he's struggling to do that with vaccines. And he has been struggling to do that for months. And we're at this point now where, you know, the doctors are in consensus, the scientists are in consensus. You know, I have to get a vaccine if I'm going to go to the cinema or the restaurants or wherever else I want to go. He needs to pick a side and stick to it and let whatever happens, happens. Because only then will we understand what kind of caucus he wants and what kind of caucus he wants to lead. And right now, you know, the perception from the outside is maybe he's okay with this chaos.
Chris Alexander, the other thing is there's a complicating factor here, and you as a former minister and MP will get this. The Conservatives also oppose the hybrid parliament. In other words, being able to join in parliament from your home using your computer. They want in-person, like the old days. The NDP and the Liberals, ironically, who are all double-vaxxed, accept the hybrid parliament. So how would this work for Mr. O'Toole if he doesn't want a hybrid parliament, but you got to be double-vaxxed to come to parliament, and clearly not all of his members are double-vaxxed. So would they just... how would they participate in democracy? I'm just trying to square the circle there. What do you make of that?
Well, that is a real question, because the hybrid parliament was created for unique circumstances when we couldn't come together, literally, in workplaces, in restaurants, in our families even, in larger groups. And those conditions are subsiding. It is possible to sit with a larger group in parliament, and one day soon it'll be possible to sit with everyone back in parliament, following federal, provincial, and other rules as they evolve. Those who are not vaxxed will still be vulnerable. And those who are not vaxxed may not be allowed into the parliament under the current rules. This is probably why Aaron O'Toole wants to come back to the issue later. But he and anyone who takes this position, including Leslyn Lewis, are on the wrong side of history on this issue. Fatima was right. Many of us saw this coming much earlier, but the Conservative Party should have dealt with it before the election. And yes, we all know that support for vaccine mandates was much lower everywhere in the world back then, but it's much higher and growing today as people see that vaccines help bring down case numbers, bring down fatality numbers, and get us back to traveling and going to work and protecting each other. So there really isn't an argument for making any member of parliament an exception to this rule, which is becoming a settled consensus really everywhere. And as Fatima says, and others have been saying, a leader has to get out in front of this issue. And the sooner that Mr. O'Toole does this, the better.
Okay, Annie, what did I know Jagmeet Singh said, look, he supports, he's even talking about a virtual parliament even more permanently, even if the conditions, as Chris Alexander talks about, don't exist. But how are both the Liberals and the NDP reacting to Erin O'Toole's desire to challenge it? Clearly, they're not going to try to, I mean, it's not going to be a vote, it's going to be a point of privilege. So I guess it would be the Speaker's ruling. But what's their view on this?
Right. So the Speaker will rule on this and will most likely, or potentially, as a lot of people are saying, rule, yeah, maybe it is a breach of privilege. And then, you know, not much really happens. And so, you know, this is obviously a done deal on Parliament. The Liberals, the NDP, the Bloc have all decided that they are in favor of vaccine mandates. They have ruled in favor of it. So that's happening. That's not going to change. But I do think what's interesting here is we were talking about that both the NDP and the Liberals are in favor of a virtual parliament, which essentially gives Erin O'Toole and the Conservatives that out they were looking for. Erin O'Toole, he said he's not in favor of a virtual parliament. He could still vote against that and still have a hybrid parliament, which means that his unvaccinated caucus members can still participate from home. So I think that the NDP and the Liberals may have sort of missed an opportunity here. You know, they really, if they had wanted to, could have hammered it home and made Erin O'Toole basically stand up for his unvaccinated members. But instead, you know, it looks like a hybrid parliament may be possible.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens. I will say this. People elect officials, and officials, they want to see their officials participate. But the rules are the rules now, and we're in the middle of a pandemic. Annie Bergeron, Oliver, Fatima Syed, and Chris Alexander. That's a baffling one, but we'll watch it unfold. Great to have the three of you on the program, as always. I really appreciate it. And that is your Power Play Day in Politics. Thanks to all of you for watching. We are back here in 23 very short hours. Hug your loved ones. Never take that one for granted. Have a great evening. I'll see you back here tomorrow.